In this fallout, Greenback needs a little help.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. The U.S. dollar is taking a beating. Not that it's been Mr. Popular lately anyway, but ever since the Federal Reserve this week announced its intent to pump more money into the American economy, commodity prices have gone up and the dollar's value down. Now a U.N. panel may recommend the dollar be ditched as the world's top reserve currency. From North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
The Fed's decision to pump $1 trillion more into the U.S. economy has other nations worried about whether the dollars they hold will drop in value. Typically, the world's central banks have about two-thirds of their cash reserves in dollars. A U.N. panel next week will recommend that the banks consider diversifying. But currency expert Mark Chandler at Brown Brothers Harriman says the U.N. has no real power over the world's central banks and what kind of cash they decide to hang on to.
Countries choose that themselves. I would say that there is no evidence whatsoever that central banks as a whole have removed one single dollar from reserves, despite people talking about this.
Chandler says countries like Russia are pulling for the U.N. to ditch the dollar because it would help them shore up their own currency. Even though the dollar may weaken a bit more, Chandler says there's no clear alternative for the world's banks to turn to. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
While there are dollar and inflation fears, it's commodity shares that are lifting stocks a bit this morning. Dow is up about 0.75%. NASDAQ up about 0.5% at this hour. The S&P 500 in early trading up about 0.5%. Asian stocks closed lower. And European shares are up for the most part at this hour. Frankfurt, London, and Paris are trading higher. There's a crackdown looming for deceptive lending. The Federal Trade Commission is planning to bar lending practices by mortgage brokers who have deceived borrowers. Congress's spending bill passed earlier this month authorizes the FTC to ban abusive practices such as deceptive advertising. Bloomberg reports the commission's chairman, John Leibowitz, is now hoping to apply that authority to the mortgage industry. Predatory lending to minorities is one of the main issues today at a U.S. Commission on Civil Rights briefing. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Reports show minority home buyers, particularly African Americans, are more likely to be in foreclosure than whites. Many observers say it's because they were pushed to sign up for mortgages they couldn't afford. Jim Carr is chief operating officer of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. He'll be at today's meeting. He wants such practices to end, and he's concerned the current spate of bank mergers could be a missed opportunity.
With this economic crisis that we've been dealing with, bank mergers have been happening left and right without public hearing. And that's the one major time when civic leaders have an opportunity to ask, are the banks doing the right thing?
By the right thing, he means lending sensibly. He says some new regulations need to go into effect quickly, or when the economy recovers, a whole new cycle of wild lending could begin. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
The Italian automaker Fiat said today it will not assume any Chrysler debt, now or in the future, in a deal for more than a third of the stake of the American car company. Not sure that Chrysler CEO Bob Nardelli got that memo on Thursday when he announced Fiat would be responsible for a share of Chrysler's debt to the U.S. government should a proposed alliance go through. Fiat's discussing trading its small car and engine technology for a 35% stake in Chrysler in a non-cash deal. You're listening to The Morning Report on Friday, March 20th, 2009, at marketplace.org. European Union leaders wrap up their meeting in Brussels today. They've been trying to put together a new regulatory framework for Europe's financial system. But there are two competing plans for the future of banking regulation. Christopher Worth reports.
Continental Europe has a blueprint for reforming financial regulation. A high-level group issued some recommendations last month, which includes international oversight of European financial institutions by the European Central Bank. The only problem is British Prime Minister Gordon Brown arrived in Brussels yesterday with his own plan for overhauling the system. Andrew Hilton of the Center for the Study of Financial Innovation says the British would like to water down proposals for European control over British banks.
We are to wholesale financial services as the French are, say, to wine, or the Germans are to cars, or the Italians are to olive oil. And we want to keep that business here, and we want it to be regulated here.
The British have an uphill battle. France and Germany have thrown their weight behind a strong pan-European regulatory body, which will provide part of the framework that they'll bring to next month's G20 summit. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Today in Washington, the International Franchise Expo kicks off. Companies that sell franchising packages will be hard-pressed to find takers in this economy, but opportunities are out there. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, here's Mitchell Hartman.
Bishop's Barbershops of Portland will be at the expo looking to expand its franchise footprint. Its stripped-down decor and cut-rate haircuts sell well in this economy. Video game retailer GamerDoc will also be hawking its franchises in D.C. It's expecting to expand from 4 to as many as 40 stores this year. Company president Jim Bellinger says offering consumers value, a $50 game you can play again and again, is key.
If you want to go to a professional basketball game, you got to spend $300, $400. You got to travel. You got to be on their time schedule. I think people are just not willing to do that anymore because, you know, they basically have priced themselves out of the market.
Bellinger says this is a good time to get into a franchise, with bargains on leases and construction easy to find. A franchise can cost upward of $200,000, and credit is tight these days, but franchisees are finding some creative financing options, like getting angel investors or tapping into retirement savings through an IRA. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
I don't know about you, but when I think of the IRS, the word super doesn't come to mind. But for marketing purposes, the agency wants taxpayers to know they have a place to go for answers to tax questions that range from the simple to the baffling. It's one big day, Super Saturday, tomorrow. Amanda Aronchik tells us more.
Last year at this time, the IRS was helping people get the Bush administration's tax rebates. This year, the agency has a different concern. Here's a recent radio ad.
First, no matter what, make sure you file a tax return.
Even if you can't afford it. Susan Carroll is the IRS executive in charge of Super Saturday.
We're seeing people in distress, so we have gone through various scenarios with our employees. We've given them special training, sensitivity training, I'll call it.
She says IRS employees know it's been a difficult year for many, so they now have more authority. They can work out payment plans, accommodate skipped payments, and speed up refunds.
During these tough economic times, we do have some ability to work with the individuals to make sure that we work out a plan that they can meet and that will help them get their taxes paid off.
The additional flexibility is the real change this year. Carol says if you're looking for the stimulus bill tax relief, you'll have to wait for Super Saturday 2010. I'm Amanda Aronchik for Marketplace.
This Sunday marks World Water Day. With droughts hitting many parts of the world, water conservation has become a hot topic. Some companies are trying to get ahead of the issue by downsizing what they call their water footprints. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Caitlin Carroll reports.
Companies used to talk about carbon footprints. You know, measuring how much carbon is emitted when products are made. But as rainfall slows and the earth heats up, companies have started worrying about water, too. That's where water footprints come in.
You can't manage what you don't measure, and that's the fundamental logic here for getting people focused on their water footprints.
Dan Esty is director of Yale Center for Business and the Environment. He says companies like Coke, Intel, and SAB Miller see water as a risky commodity, especially as states and cities struggle with how to price it.
In the United States, we increasingly do have a price for water, and therefore companies are taking it seriously, especially in the drier parts of the country.
A recent study found more than 100 companies lost millions of dollars when crops died and manufacturing plants closed due to drought. So now companies are using rainwater recycling systems and irrigating fields of cotton, barley, and sugarcane with less water, and gaining some customer goodwill at the same time.
Hey, we're in the Levi's store, and here we have the straight legs, we have bootcut jeans.
At Levi's flagship store in San Francisco, Levi's rep E.J. Bernacki wades through piles of jeans. The company recently took the water footprint of one pair.
Here's the medium stonewashed 501, and this is the jean that we did the life cycle assessment on.
Levi's found that the jeans gulped up more than 900 gallons of water, from the cotton stage all the way to when the customer is done with the pair. About half the water came from cotton farming, and 45% was used by consumers, basically lost to the laundry cycle. Since then, the company's cut its own water use by 30% in the last year, using different finishing techniques on the fabric and recycling old denim into new jeans. And now it's turned the public's push for better practices on them.
Wash only when it's absolutely necessary. It's better for the environment, and it's also much better for the jeans.
Levi's is telling customers that washing is wasting. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
The music scene has taken over the streets of Austin, Texas. The South by Southwest Festival is going into its last weekend, one that'll feature a lot of songs and a lot of music shop talk. David Brown reports on all that for Public Radio KUT in Austin. And I guess I have to ask you, David, if this economic fallout is affecting what's going on over there.
Well, you know, South by Southwest is one of Austin's surest economic generators. It gins up about $100 million for the city in economic activity each year. With a series of three big events, music's just one part of it. There's also a film event and a fast-growing interactive conference. This year, sales of badges, the ticket to see all the music shows, they were down by an estimated 10 to 15%. But there were more bands this year. That suggests that the industry's putting more money and pushing the bands that make the money and maybe doing less schmoozing. But more important for the festival, we're seeing sales on that interactive event up by about 30%. We don't have any final numbers, but as one headline put it here, South by Southwest appears to be rocking through the recession.
Well, a lot of record label folk there too, right, David? And downloads in the digital age have turned the industry pretty much upside down. I mean, how does that affect what I would think is an industry event like South by Southwest?
You know, it's funny. You put your finger right on it when you say industry event. Something people sometimes lose sight of because there's so much great music down here is that this isn't a festival. Really, this is a music conference. It's about exposing people in the music industry to new talent and to trends and maybe others with something to offer. It's a networking thing. For the past several years, these panel events have started with a lot of doom and gloom about the meltdown of the record industry. But what's happened on the flip side of that is it's all about DIY or do-it-yourself everything, from recording to marketing to building brands. To be a musician today, you really have to be an entrepreneur. So South by Southwest, which used to be dominated by the suits, it's completely inverted. Nowadays, if you're a musician, you come not just to be exposed to the people who can sign you the big labels or get discovered. It's about learning how to stand out in a world where, you know, the barriers to entry on the internet are nil. So how do you make your brand pop out? How do you get heard with all those MySpace pages out there? That's what this has become. And so in a way, South by Southwest has become, I think, maybe truer to the spirit of independent music than it was when it was founded 23 years ago. These are real independents becoming entrepreneurs and making things work for themselves.
David Brown is host and editor of Texas Music Matters, the music journalism unit over at KUT in Austin. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Steve.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Friday and a very nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.